Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to have Clark Kellogg, our first look at the Final Four. And not a better guest to have than the guy that's going to be sitting there with Jim Nantz as part of the broadcast team, Clark Kellogg. In about 15 minutes, all things around the Final Four with Clark Kellogg. We'll shift gears because that is the story now moving forward along with spring training. Tim Reister is going to be with us today, too. Speaking of really good stories, co-owner Phoenix Rising FC, board member of the team. And Tim has been in the Valley. I've talked about having Tim on board with this ownership group and how very smart that was and valuable that is, because finding the dollars and finding the sponsors and just having somebody who knows their way around and having an agency that's been around for a long time in the Valley and reputable. When I saw Tim's name, it was like, wow, okay. He's going to be with us because I've been inundated with questions from fans. We have done things around the soccer club when it was Arizona United, and now that it's Phoenix Rising FC, I see soccer very clearly growing up in a soccer environment in San Diego. And so I've had coaches shows, I've done their games, I've done all of it for the last 3 years. And I think that they're close now because there's a much wider group, and the heavy lifting, a lot of it has been done, and now they're going to continue the heavy lifting of building this and pushing it over the top. The MLS, they've applied for application as an expansion franchise, but why is it that Don Garber, the head of the MLS, visited San Diego, Sacramento, and Cincinnati, but has not visited Phoenix? I want to know that. I've got plenty of questions from fans on that. I've had plenty of questions from fans about the stadium. I mentioned that out at TPC Scottsdale last week, that facility that they have out there at 16 and around the golf course is going to be the home of Phoenix Rising FC in some capacity, from what I've been told. That may have changed. I don't know. And groundbreaking and all that. So we're going to get into that about 10:45 with Tim Reister. Looking forward to that. There's a few stories that caught my eye. One of them was last night. I got a text from Charlie Ragle. And Charlie Ragle is leaving the University of Arizona. So he is going to Cal. And I think that's a terrific move for Charlie. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. Those of you that know the college football scene and high school football scene know Charlie's name very, very well. Arizona State fans will be thrilled that he is leaving because he had been the only recruiter. I think, Eric, that's the fair way to put it. That's not a slam on Rich, but Charlie was the only guy, right, when you're talking to coaches?
Their lead in-state recruiter for the Wildcats was Charlie Ragle,
yeah.
as it was described to me. Their lead
by in-state. Coaches.
By coaches. Yeah. Their lead in-state recruiter. The
elite
one that,
coaches,
the
by
one
the
that had their... That had his feet on the ground and was making the rounds and making a push to try to get kids down to Tucson.
Yeah. So that caught my eye. And Michael Floyd's deal about I'm a champion and he can't believe people in Arizona are upset. I don't care about Michael Floyd.
That's about as surprising as not at all for Michael Floyd to take a cheap shot.
No. I mean, he didn't play in the game. Oh, he was valuable. He was on scout team as Julio Jones. Got it. You got over on everybody in Arizona because you acted like a fool, and we're just supposed to say, oh, well, this is how it's supposed to work. Well, no. That's why there are people that don't like sports when you have stories like this. You know? What's wrong with sports? That's what's wrong with sports. The commissioner should have stepped in and said, we're not going to let you play. But, you know, we'll just look the other way as though the dash cam video and the police video just made it up. Or it's the media's fault. Of course it's our fault. All we did was show the video. It's always our fault. Yeah, we were the ones that were out at 2 a.m. Oh, wait, no, that was you that was out at 2 a.m. drunk as a skunk. Oh, you guys are hating on me. No, I the video's right there. It's right there. Use the LeBron line. Oh, you're just hating. Like, so to go out and say I'm a champion, knock yourself out. Knock yourself. That's your definition, then... You're going to the Hall of Fame too, right? You got it all figured out, right? Glad he's not on my team. Tonight, we've got Arizona tonight at home against Stanford. And I think in the college basketball world that Markkanen and Trier are trying to figure it out. So I'm going to get into that with Clark Kellogg here in a little bit. And then ASU hosting Cal at 9 o'clock tonight. Like, who in God's green earth is going to watch ESPNU at 9 p.m.? for this game. Are you going to check that out?
Sure. Why not?
That's you diving
about,
in on that?
Yeah, that's usually about the time I ramp down my day. And I it's not on Pac-12 Network, Brad, so I can actually watch this ASU game. I'm excited about that. And give credit to the Sun Devils. They had a good weekend. They pushed Oregon. They beat Oregon State.
No, I'm fine with where they
Bobby
are.
Considering Bobby Hurley has three scholarship players or something ridiculous like that, I'm exaggerating.
I have been a fan of what Bobby's doing. I have said on this show, Bobby Hurley is doing a good job. Of course, U of A fan will never accept that. And when they get crushed by Oregon, it's, you know, it's everybody else's fault, whatever.
It's not an easy build. We all know that.
No, especially when it's been torn down so many times. Baylor should get a death penalty, but they won't, by the way. I'm getting to that a little bit later on. But the story of the night actually was LaMelo Ball. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. My man crush on Lonzo Ball, the point guard over at UCLA. I've made no secret. I want the Suns to keep losing. Guys, keep losing. You're doing us all a favor. I want you to bring Lonzo Ball here, and I want you to put him in the backcourt. I don't care how many guards they have. I don't care. Lonzo Ball will put butts in the seats, something you need. He'll bring interest. He'll bring ratings, and he can play. And I want he can play as the first order of business. But from a business standpoint, there's not a whole lot of likability around this team outside of Devin Booker, no matter how hard they try to market and shove names down our throats. The team is going nowhere this year. Once again, it's another year where they're going to miss the playoffs. The last time the Suns made the playoffs was May 29th of 2010, last playoff game. Those of you that have been here like me through the years know it's completely unacceptable and embarrassing. Not going to sugarcoat it. So anything about Lonzo Ball, I'm into. His little brother from Chino Hills High School played last night against Los Osos, okay? He went out on the court and scored 92 points. 92 points. Now, let's see some of this. Okay, so there's the layup. And he's going to pick here.
Some of this is they had a full game, so I basically scanned through part of it to try to find some highlights. But you'll get the idea as this rolls through what kind of game it was last night in California. Okay,
so he
follows up his own miss. Okay, that's two
fine.
Layups. Keep
that's
watching.
That's not being a ball
Keep
hog.
Keep watching. Okay, there's three layups.
Okay, that's not being a ball hog. Is this something where people are like, he scored 92? This is a team that takes in the back. This team scored 120 that they beat. This wasn't one of those 140-38 games. Okay, so is he back on defense? No, he's just cherry picking. What's wrong with this? Are you hating this point total? Do you think it's jaded?
I see both sides of the street with this. Okay, to score 92 points in an 8-minute quarter high school basketball game is it's.
They're not getting back on defense.
I compared it, Brad, to throwing back-to-back perfect games. It's so hard to do. Then I saw the highlights of him just playing half-court basketball, really, and it kind of slanted my opinion.
Well, what's wrong with this? So, kid drives down here. He's not going to be back on defense for that. Kid misses. They get the board. They look down court. They throw an outlet. And they give it to him. He's on a wing. What's he going to do?
I mean, I don't know. I guess that I just...
He got fouled there. He went to the free throw line.
This is more of a street basketball game than a high school basketball game. You would think after
he could have passed it there.
You would
he
think after he got behind the defense for the 39th time last night, maybe the opposing coach would say, hey, both guards, why don't you go back on defense when the shot goes up?
He was 37 of 61 from the field. Now, that little clip that we just showed was all layups.
It was. He was 7 of 22 on threes.
Okay. He's a five-star sophomore, 30 of 39 from two-point country. Now, he scored 92 in a game. The team that they played put 123 on him. They won 146 to 123, to your point, eight-minute quarters.
Think about that. That's 150
that's
points in a high school basketball
that's
game?
That's awesome.
What is this, layup lines?
Okay, but now let's take
it. Were they playing 5-on-3?
It looked like it. Now let's take it. The kid had 29 points at halftime. LaVar Ball, his the dad. I gotta scroll this because I want to get this right.
I believe there's three Ball boys, no pun intended.
According to his father, Ball had 29 at halftime, and then he went crazy. Ball told ESPN, I unleashed him. Okay. My boys got mad when they lose, LaVar Ball said, because they lost the other night. And LaMelo started on fire, just attacking the rim. They tried to double triple team him after he scored 45. So he scored 41 points in the fourth quarter alone. 41, Eric, in the fourth quarter alone. Now, when I was a sophomore in high school, I don't think 92 was ever on my radar. I might have scored, I don't know, what was your greatest athletic achievement as a sophomore? We'll get to Clark in a second.
Maybe 12 points in a game.
As a sophomore.
Probably 12 points. I think my career high in high school was like 15 points, all through high school.
So I had 35 as my career high, and it was against our arch rival. Like my most memorable, I would think for him, LaMelo Ball, if they were to ask him 10 years from now, what was your most memorable high school moment? If it's not winning a championship, I put 92 on a team. So, like, guys, any of you, what would be your most memorable high school moment athletically when you were 15, when you're a sophomore? Any of us put 92 up on an opponent?
It's not uncommon for a team to go two games and not score 92 points as a team
sure.
in high school.
Sure. Well, but it's like there's probably guys watching the pitch perfect games or struck out 10 or 20 or, you know, if it's my most memorable high school moment, it could be Junior Seau pushing me into the bleachers. And that was basically the end of my career, which did happen. Or it could be me hitting two free throws in a 14-12 game against our arch rival who took the air out of the ball. And there were 2 seconds left. The game was at our gym, arch rival. And I hit two free throws, and their student section was screaming at me. It was awesome. But that was a senior. I wasn't even as a sophomore. It's just stunning. All right, Clark Kellogg on the other side, CBS College basketball analyst. He is going to be in the Valley with the Final Four here this year. Let's ramp it up with one of the best in the business. That's Clark Kellogg. I'm Brad Sussmat. We are 50 days and a bit of change away from March Madness coming here with the Final Four at Glendale. And Eric said to me, it's about time to get Clark Kellogg if we can find him, and we've been able to. It's always good to have Clark on the show, CBS Sports lead college basketball analyst. He will be courtside at UOP when it gets into the Final Four, and we appreciate him joining us here for a few minutes. Do you have golf lined up? Do you have dinners lined up? Do you have everything? We want to be hospitable. We want to be hospitable for you, Clark.
Oh, yeah, we won't have any problem enjoying the Phoenix area. Looking forward to being there for the first time for the Final Four, and excited about it. I've been out there a couple of times. I was actually just out there for the Buckeye-Clemson football game, college football playoffs. My wife and I came out with a contingent from Ohio State. Not a great day, but
yeah.
The area is great. So, no, looking forward to it, and we'll map out a game plan for a little relaxation before the craziness starts, which is, for me, usually Thursday night.
Well, and let's go into that, because the craziness from my view this year, Clark, it has been a great college basketball season filled with young stars, and every week there's a different number one. I mean, top to bottom, this has been a tremendous year, and I don't know if it's just the Final Four being here, but I feel like we've got a special season going on.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way, and I'm sure that the fact that it will culminate there in Phoenix raises your antenna and radar a bit. It's like kind of when you get a car and you hadn't been paying attention to similar cars like that, and then you start seeing them a lot more
when
you have one yourself. So it's similar, but no, clearly when you look at the tremendous number of impactful young players, and I'm not just talking about the elite guys that look like they'll be pros sooner rather than later, but there's a real depth to the number of outstanding freshmen all over the country that will be on display in the tournament. And you mentioned the number of changes we've had at the top of the polls, and also the significant games and moments that we've seen across the country throughout college basketball. I certainly hope it's a prelude to what we'll have in March, and I'm pretty sure it will be. I do think we're going to have March is always good, Brad, and it looks like this year could be even sweeter in terms of the parody and the drama and hopefully exciting games.
Clark Kellogg with a CBS Sports lead college basketball analyst with the Final Four here at UOP at the end of March. Before I get into some teams, I want to just ask you a little bit about process and preparation for you. Going into a role of March Madness, when do you start? Is it in the summertime, start looking ahead? Is it in November? Does those games make much to you? Is it about now? When do you start to really dive in to what the tournament may look like? If you could take us through the process.
Yeah, I start preparing for college basketball usually right around late September, early October. I go back through my notes from last season. I tend to make notes during the course of the tournament, young teams that may not have made it to the NCAA tournament, but could be there in the following season, teams that got beat but returned. You know, I look at all of the – I try to document teams that are worth keeping an eye on coming into the next season, and then I'll review that, and then I'll start bouncing around. I'll try to get to a handful of practices. Love to see teams in person prior to the season as best I can. I'm living here in Columbus, Ohio. I've got a pretty good radius of being able to get around and see some teams. And then I'll start watching the games. I'll start watching volumes and volumes of games. And I really try to stay away from preseason rankings and publications to avoid being swayed one way or another. I really try to base my note-taking and evaluation on observation, not what I read. So I'll stay away from the magazines for a while. And as we get into to November, a lot of good matchups, so I'll document and note games that I watch, key players and so forth. And then once we start at CBS, then I'll kind of go every 2 weeks. I'll try to do an evaluation of top teams, second-tier teams, teams that people aren't watching that I think might make the field that could surprise some folks. And then I'll kind of update that every – I try to stay away from evaluating teams every week. I like to do it every 3 to 4 games, which is about a 10-day to 2-week period. And then just make notes. I keep a big notebook all year long, and I'm evaluating players and teams. And then we'll zero in. By doing it all year, much like the selection committee, when it's time for the intensity of March, I pretty much have a good feel on who I like, why I like them, who folks should be keeping an eye on, and so forth. And then we just try to make sure there's plenty of room to freely offer analysis and opinion based on what I've seen.
Do you go through about 100 teams, given that the field will shrink and you're going to have those upsets? Here we are, the early part of February, second week of February. Are you at 80 teams, 100 teams that you're analyzing? Do you start to shrink
I'm probably,
it?
I'm probably at 60 to 70 because I've watched a bunch. I mean, I've watched far more than that. But in terms of beginning to really zero in, with the teams that typically – with the teams from leagues that apparent that are most likely going to have just one team and their conference champion, I'm trying to watch the 3 or 4 top teams at least once or twice in those leagues. I mean, I've got my eye on Vermont, UNC Wilmington, Middle Tennessee, and I make sure that I watch those teams during the season, anticipating Florida Gulf Coast, those kind of teams. I watch them during the season back in, you know, November, December, and then I make a note of their best players because those teams typically are going to have a chance percentage-wise to be part of the field. So I make sure I watch them, and then obviously I get to analyze the top 30 teams pretty thoroughly because they're on television a lot. And then that next group of 30, I try to make sure I see them you know, a couple of times, hopefully in person when I'm out doing games. But most of my work now that I'm not out as much is primarily by way of video and making sure I'm watching usually 3 to 5 games a day during the week is what I try to watch.
Wow, and that's an awful lot of preparations, good stuff there. Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports lead college basketball analyst with the Final Four coming to the Valley at the end of March. Focusing in on U of A, I'm guessing you have not seen much of Arizona State given Bobby Hurley's season. Grand Canyon with Dan Marley, they'll be eligible next year. They gave Louisville a push. So I'm not going to really go into those two schools unless you've got a thought. I'll focus mostly on Arizona. They add Trier. They've scuffled here recently, not just getting blown out by Oregon, Clark. It seems, from my view at least, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're trying to figure it out now with Markkanen and Trier and how to work those two together.
No question. There's always an adjustment. You'd love to be able to try to adjust after an injection of talent. So I think Sean and his staff are fine with that, but it is part of the process, and every team goes through it, Brad. There's no team that's immune to adjusting, whatever the circumstances are that cause you to adjust. Length of season, injuries, adding a player, roles changing. There's so many variables, and that's why I don't like to evaluate teams week at a time. Mm-hmm. I want to give it a chance to ferment and develop and kind of watch, and so therefore there is a process, and every team has periods where they're struggling, and sometimes you lose when you struggle. Sometimes you still find a way to win when you struggle, but it doesn't change the fact that you're struggling. I just read about Villanova. They're not holding on the leads the way they want to. They've lost, what, two or three games, I think? And in many, they've had big leads and haven't finished well, so they're going through that process. So every team goes through it, and the key is to be healthy and to try to have your weaknesses minimized and your strengths accentuated as you move forward. And that's the challenge of every team and coaching staff. And Arizona is no different. They're a legitimate Final Four caliber team. They've got outstanding young players. It seems like they've got pretty good, solid leadership. They've got size. I mean, they're a legitimate top two seed to me right now. If we shut it off today, they look like a solid two seed to me with a chance to be a one, depending on what happens. But they're really, really good and obviously extremely well coached.
Can you split the hairs of Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona?
Not really. I let the bracketologists do that. I mean, I'm not interested in splitting the hairs. I group teams.
Okay.
I mean, what's the difference between two and three? What's the difference between one and two? I mean, it's really, really negligible. But you have to do it because we got a 68-team bracket, and that's what the committee does. I don't get into that. I group them, and then I watch them, and ultimately matchups dictate. They're in a group of, to me, Arizona, Oregon, UCLA, Kentucky, Gonzaga. I mean, you could put 10 teams, and you'd have a tough time splitting hairs. So I don't I've got plenty of work to do other than spending time splitting hair. So I try to pick my priorities in my work, and that's not one of them.
When a Gonzaga beats an Arizona, as they did head-to-head, or Arizona goes to Pauley Pavilion and beats UCLA, as they did, how much does that factor in your preparation of analyzing a team for regular season games in December and January? There is a difference,
I think. I like to see teams win on the road. I do like to see teams handle their business on the road. So for me, that's always a few extra points when you can go and beat a good opponent on the road. If you do it amidst some type of adversity, maybe not having your full complement of players, that even impresses you more. But again, each game is an entity in and of itself. And while we like to think there's carryover, there's not often from game to game. It's the practice time and the habits you build, mm-hmm. and then being able to bring your best. So clearly when you see, I guess I would call them eyebrow raisers, when Arizona handled UCLA the way they did, was very impressive to me because, one, their offense was terrific. And typically, you have to be decent defensively, pretty good defensively against UCLA, but I thought the offensive side of the ball is where Arizona won that game. And to me, championship teams are good defensively, but they also have to be able to score at a pretty good level. Your defense might win you one, maybe two tournament games, but if you're going to win that whole thing, you're not going to do it if you can't score the ball.
A couple other questions with Clark Kellogg. Appreciate your time. Let me circle back over to Markkanen. It sounds from every angle, whenever NBA teams roll through Phoenix, they ask about Markkanen or they want to talk about him. And it seems as though, and I'm not wanting to push the kid out the door, I'd rather see him stay, that he's leaning towards leaving. What do you see out of Markkanen as a player, Clark?
Well, a couple of things. One, first, I have to offer this caveat. I really like to evaluate guys in person. That's when I can really speak with great conviction.
Got it.
And I've not seen him in person. That said, you can get an idea watching enough games. I like his size, his strength, his mobility, his stroke. His IQ seems to be really good for a young player. So all of the things, I mean, there's some guys that you watch and they just look pro-like.
Mm-hmm.
And he's that. I mean, and he looks potentially all-star pro-like. You know, you can go different categories. So that said, I've always said this, Brad, it's an individual call when your dream and desire is to be a pro. When you decide to try to realize that dream, For me, it was after my junior year back in 1982. For other guys, it's after their first year. Some guys leave prematurely and never find their way in the league. Other guys stay all four and have long careers or don't. You know, so it's a very, very personal individual journey and call. And so with a number of these outstanding freshmen, including Laurie, they have to make a decision. And he looks like he's got all the ingredients to be a high-level long-term NBA player. It's just a matter of when he decides to start that clock for himself.
Apologies for stepping on you there. Last question, no I'll problem. Let you go. And that is, when you look across the country of teams this year, I don't want to get into players, time doesn't allow, but teams that you're still not quite sure, you look at them and say, I'm not quite sure about this team. I think they could be really good, but they could be a one and done.
Cincinnati would be one. I think they're better offensively, pretty good defensively. I like the fact that they can make threes a little better than they have in the past. So I like the ability to score, and they've shown that ability. Virginia, interesting to me. They look like a typical Virginia team. Do they have enough to beat an Arizona or a Gonzaga or a team they might meet in an Elite Eight kind of game if that were to happen? Those are teams that I'm probably a little, that could be that will be most likely top 16 caliber type teams. When you look at them, Villanova, I think they still need to get a little more consistency from their front line to be championship caliber. I think you could probably – I could go down a list of teams and say there's some things I've got questions about. But those teams, just to give you a quick answer, those three would be teams that I'm kind of looking at as maybe how they might fare the rest of the way.
Well, look, when you come out here, if you go way down the list and you get to Sorensen and Sesmat, what can they help me with a dinner recommendation? We're around, you know, we want to be very hospitable out here and not just be the guys that can tell you to stay away from that cactus or whatever. So we appreciate the visit and the time as always, Clark.
Yeah, my pleasure, Brad. Great to visit with you. And hopefully I'll see you when we get out there in April.
Stay well. Thanks much. There's Clark Kellogg with us. CBS Sports lead college basketball analyst. That's good stuff there. Appreciate his time. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. And later in the show, we're going to have Tim Reister with us from Phoenix Rising FC because there's quite a bit of news around Rising FC. And I had a lot of fans that sent me notes on questions about them with the stadium and just questions about MLS. We'll get into that in about 15 minutes. Back with more after this timeout. Thanks again to Clark Kellogg being with us. We should have done Clark every week, Eric, thinking back on it. That was solid. I know the Final Four is right around the corner, but...
he'd probably be up for it.
You think?
I think so. He's a busy guy. He's a very organized guy. Sometimes it takes a little bit to get to him.
Does it?
But it's
There's
not.
Layers?
No, but there aren't that many layers.
That's good.
And he seems I haven't met him in person, but all my dealings with him have been great. And obviously, I've watched him for many years on CBS. So,
you know, Jim Nantz was in town, and I think he's going to be hooked up for golf. I'm wondering if I could even get Clark a golf hookup. Like, would it be over at, Ocotillo? We had that story about Ocotillo a couple weeks ago that Phil was going to buy it with Spike, and that got announced yesterday.
I know someone that works over at Weston Kierland who I could probably...
You know someone?
I do. I could probably get a deal of some sort.
You think?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'd have to ask her.
Her? All right. You don't sleep with her, do you?
Nightly, yes.
Wow. That's a lot of information. Jimmy Garoppolo. So I'm bringing this name up because with the way the NFL draft, and we're going to do some draft stuff starting next week as the combine is coming up. We're already starting to see the little bit of questions coming in. What do you think the Cardinals should do with their draft pick? So on and so forth. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is kind of the wild card in all of this year. There's been some talk about the 49ers and what do they do at quarterback if they go get Deshaun Watson. And if they get Deshaun Watson, do you immediately throw him to the wolves and throw him out there and have him just get crushed and run over? Or do you bring a guy like Matt Schaub in, who Kyle Shanahan is very familiar with, and put him at quarterback and just say, look, nurture this through? Or is Deshaun Watson ready to play? Like the Rams tried the Jared Goff deal of having him sit on the sideline this year, and by the end of the year, he still was getting his head kicked in. So I didn't see any improvement on that. If you're those teams, if you're the Chicago Bears, are you going to take Kaiser Are you going to take Trubisky? Are you going to take these guys? Are these guys really going to turn you around? Or are you committed to Matt Barkley, or do you need to go after Jimmy Garoppolo? Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be a name, I think, in this offseason. Our hometown heroes, are they going to draft a quarterback in the first round? I don't think they have to draft a quarterback in the first round as I look at the Cardinals. They don't have to. You know, they tried the Logan Thomas deal, and that didn't work at all. They brought Matt Barkley here. That didn't work at all. But is Matt Barkley going to be the guy in Chicago? So Garoppolo's sitting around out there, and I saw where Josh McCown got blown out again by the Browns. Josh McCown's a serviceable veteran quarterback. I can't believe he's still in the league. I mean, he's just gotten beat on unmercifully through the years. And so if you're the Cardinals, are you going to be like, to me, bringing Garoppolo here behind Carson Palmer would not make sense. Would it make sense to you? I don't think that one makes sense for Arizona, but if you're the Jets,
the price tag would be steep, I would think. Because the Patriots know teams are desperate for quarterbacks.
Sure.
And when Tom Brady says, yeah, I'm probably going to play another 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And when he says he's going to play 4 or 5 years, that means he's going to play 4 or 5 years. So they can just spike up, you know, yeah, we want this, 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 and then these two players. Because they know teams are desperate for quarterbacks. Desperate. And he is as, I don't know, is he a proven commodity?
No, I don't think he is.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
He played well on.
Is he a first-round pick?
No, but he played well on a very good team, and you know how people love to bite the apple when it comes.
No, and you're right on that. You're right on that. So I'm looking at Garoppolo as kind of the wild card out there, and then, you know, if Carson Palmer were to say, you know, I don't think I want to play anymore, but I can't imagine Larry would have come back. I think it's just spaced out so that they get the media blitz and the media play out of the deal, and they release it when they release it, and that's, you know, that's the business of PR. You know, Carson Palmer sitting here on February 8th, having not made a decision. I find that hard to believe. I just do, being around sports through the years. So that's of interest to me. Steve Sarkisian. So yesterday we had the story about how Sark left Nick Saban, and people are up in arms about this. And I'm thinking, guys, you don't have to go recruit in the pro game. You don't have to go get on a plane and go beg some 17-year-old to come play for you. You don't have to be under Nick Saban's shadow. You're with a coach who's defensive-minded in Dan Quinn. The quarterback you have is pretty darn good. The receivers you have are really good. The running backs you have, pretty darn good. You've got everything in place. Like, why would you? What would be the point in staying? So I don't get all the hate on Sark. The NFL, as much as I like the college game, to me, the NFL is a better gig as an assistant coach than a college job is. College is, you've got this whole other side of the pillow that you've got to get into, and that's recruiting. You know, are you recruiting in the NFL? Probably a little bit, a tiny, tiny, tiny bit, but not much. So I just feel as though that's one that you look at and you say, I'm not sure about why you'd be hating on Sark on this. This seems to me to be a better gig. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Tim Reister is going to join us on the other side. Phoenix Rising FC club owner. We'll talk about what's going on Rising FC's front with the stadium and expansion and much, much more. Stay with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership with AZ Central. The last 3 years, it's been great to be with them. Our football show, Brad Sismat, Football AZ, on Fox Sports Arizona tonight, 4 airings tonight, and then 3 more tomorrow, 14 during the week. We appreciate the partnership with Fox Sports Arizona. By the way, any of our content you can check out on demand at sports360AZ.com. Appreciate Clark Kellogg with CBS Sports with us earlier on the show. I want to turn our attention to Tim Reister. He joins us now, Phoenix Rising FC club co-owner, board member of the team. And when Tim came on board, this is the first time he's been with me on the show, so I can say this publicly. When Tim came on board with the team, I said, this is a real key hire because here's somebody that can take that whole marketing business side and go run with it. And to get them to the next level, which is the MLS, they're going to need to have that. In the last couple of months, Rising FC has made progress, I think, in getting towards the MLS. Huge progress. And we've had a lot of fans with questions. So, Tim, I appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for your kind comments, and it's a pleasure to be with you, and I really appreciate everything you've done over the years to help advance professional soccer in Arizona.
I appreciate that. All right, let's get right down the list of questions I've gotten from fans here. The stadium update, when is groundbreaking on this? I'm getting these types of questions. What can you give us in terms of that?
Well, the private groundbreaking has already occurred. Because the stadium is on tribal lands, the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community wanted to have their own blessing of the site in their customs and in private. So that's already happened. If you've driven by the site, you've probably seen a whole lot of progress over the last week. They're very large yellow tractors moving dirt and getting the pitch ready to roll, and you'll see every day an amazing amount of progress as we move toward our March 25th home opener against Toronto. So everything's underway. I think we'll have a public groundbreaking ceremony in about 2 weeks. We're waiting until we're ready to lay the first piece of sod.
Okay.
And we'll be inviting our fans to join us out there and help us put the first piece of grass on the new pitch.
In terms of fans that aren't aware of the stadium location, why don't you give them the cross streets and all of that so they have a better idea, Tim?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Brad. The new stadium, so Phoenix Rising FC has signed a long-term agreement with a development organization of the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community called Solano. And we've secured 45 acres of land just north of the 202 freeway in east of McClintock. So you would exit at McClintock, you would go north just a few hundred yards, and then you'll turn into our property. And we're currently developing the first 16 acres of the 45-acre piece. We have it on a 70-year lease. We have options to extend the lease well beyond that into the future. And this first 16-acre parcel that we're developing will house a permanent training facility for our team, so it'll have a field just for training purposes. It will have a team headquarters for the players and the coaching staff with really nice locker rooms and training equipment and offices. And then it will have a pop-up stadium. And a pop-up stadium is different than a $200 million stadium. It's a stadium that we can put up very quickly. And the best way I can describe it is for fans who've attended the Phoenix Open, the Waste Management Phoenix Open Golf Tournament, we've hired the exact same vendors who erect the bleachers and corporate suites at that sporting event, and they will be building our pop-up stadium for us. So it will be the exact same luxury seating that fans experience at the Phoenix Open, and we'll have very similar corporate suites, except ours will be air-conditioned.
So it's like being at the 16th hole. You're making another 16. Is that what you're doing, Tim?
It'll be just like the 16th hole, except there'll be a beautiful FIFA-qualified soccer pitch, and we're investing millions of dollars in this. So it will be the nicest soccer facility that we've ever had here in Arizona, and it will be our home until we are accepted by MLS to become the home of one of the expansion franchises. And as soon as that occurs, we'll break ground on the rest of the property and start building a permanent 20 to 25,000 seat stadium that would be climate controlled and up to the standards of MLS.
We were joined by Tim Reister, Phoenix Rising FC Club co-owner, board member. So again, I'm getting questions sent in to me and over the last 24 hours since I said you were coming on. Have the people at Rising FC looked at partnering with the Coyotes given their current situation? So questions I've had sent to me by fans.
Yeah, so we are focused on business transactions that we can control. And while we have great respect for all the other professional sports franchises here in Arizona and are fans of their teams and want them all to be extremely successful, partnering with one on a stadium isn't something where we have 100% control. And because the MLS application occurred so quickly and because an opportunity to hopefully work with MLS will require us to move even even faster regarding the development of a stadium. We didn't want to put ourselves in a position where we needed anybody else to say yes or we needed public financing. Instead, we locked in our own land at the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community, and we've locked in our own financing. So we're ready to go, and we're hopeful that the Coyotes will end up nearby. I think that would be great for both of our organizations. But we're not in a position where we're partnering with them on a stadium or a site.
It's good to know. Was asked here about the expansion. Obviously, a lot of questions on this front. So, and I brought this up last week when I saw that Don Garber was in San Diego for 2 days, and he went to Sacramento, and he went to Cincinnati. He didn't come here. I was going to call him, but I figured I'll start with you. Where are you at with having the MLS come here now that you've put in the application?
So interestingly, the MLS and Don Garber, they have been here.
Okay.
Mr. Garber and his colleagues actually visited Phoenix 13 or 14 years ago and stood on the site where we are currently under construction.
Okay.
And identified it as an ideal location for a future MLS stadium and franchise here in Phoenix. He has not been here recently. Instead, we went to him. And what had occurred when we acquired the team at the end of August and began the process of a rebranding and some of the changes that we thought would be necessary to have an opportunity to compete for an MLS franchise, they became aware of what was happening in Phoenix. They were looking at the interest in the market, the press coverage. We were very fortunate, Brad, with your help and other media experts and professionals throughout the Southwest in the United States. Within 1 week of our name change to Phoenix Rising FC, we had over 255 million media impressions, and that really caught their attention at MLS. And they understood that we were very serious in Phoenix now. We're ready. We have the financial backing to take this all the way to MLS. And we're in a market that has proven time and time again with Copa America, think about the different sporting events that come here and succeed over and over again, whether it's NASCAR. NASCAR does two sprint events here instead of just one. We've already mentioned the Phoenix Open. It's the largest attended PGA golf event of the entire season, and it happens here. We've had two Super Bowls. Interestingly, is the only city without an MLS team participating in Copa America as a host city. We had the highest amount of attendance to a single game with the Mexico-Uruguay game. So I think MLS is known for quite some time that Phoenix is a must-have city for their league. They were just waiting for the right ownership group to come together with the financial backing and a stadium solution, and we now finally have that.
It's all good stuff. We're visiting with Tim Reister, Phoenix Rising FC Club co-owner, Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Appreciate Tim with us. One other question that I've gotten from fans on this is, in terms of level of competition with other cities, I know you can only control so much. But with the NFL leaving San Diego and the MLS immediately going out there and a big media push, from what I see out there, is San Diego a competition for you? Is it Sacramento? Is it Cincinnati? 2020 is when we hear they want to add. Fill in the blanks on that, because I've gotten a lot of questions in that regard.
Well, we have great respect for the other applicants for the MLS franchise expansion cities. And some of them compete with us in the United Soccer League now and have a history of very good fan attendance. And I think one of the things that MLS would like to see from us, really it's the only unknown piece, is even though Phoenix has proven that it would support professional soccer with attendance at very high levels like Copa America, can we create consistent fan support and attendance for our USL team that we could leverage and carry forward to MLS? Sacramento and Sacramento Republic is the United Soccer League team up there, has done this very well. So has Cincinnati. So this is something where I need to ask all of the soccer fans in Arizona, if you want to help us bring MLS to Phoenix, you have a very important part. We've covered everything else that's a requirement. They just need to see the fans committed to bringing the sport by showing up and attending the games that we have now. When you look at our seat pricing, it's very quickly obvious we're not trying to make money on this right now. We have seats priced at $10 and $20 and $25 and $30. So people can afford season tickets to come see Phoenix Rising FC and bring the whole family, and it's less expensive than going to see a movie. So if the fans will come out, I think we can get there. And if you put yourself in the shoes of MLS, and more importantly, an MLS sponsor, Phoenix is at the top of the list across every single category of measurement of the expansion cities. We have the largest population. We have the largest forecasted population by 2030. We have the largest population of millennials under the age of 45. Hmm. And we have the largest population of Hispanics. And then probably number one, we have the largest TV households.
Right.
Of all 12 expansion cities. So if you're Don Garber and you're going to go in and have a big meeting with a potential sponsor for the whole MLS league and talk to them about supporting the league, would you rather tell them you just added another dinky city to the group, or you've added the biggest city with the most TV households and the greatest soccer fans of all of the United States that aren't currently part of the league? That's what we offer to MLS.
It's pretty convincing. Where do I sign up? I appreciate your time on this and hope to see you down the road and visit more on this. Tim, thanks.
Thank you very much, Brad. Talk to you soon.
You got it. There's Tim Reister with us. Phoenix Rising FC Club co-owner and board member. That's good stuff. Good update there. A lot of meat on that bone. And I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I made no bones about it. This is the next sport that I see, and it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out that with the growth of soccer and the growth of MLS and the growth of the game and all the events that we have here, that's why the last 3 years I've done their games, because I've saw it, you know, I see it very clearly, and it's really no reason why we shouldn't be able to. And I say we, I know I'm supposed to be objective on this. I'm really not. I want more sports here for us. I don't buy into this. Well, there's just not enough dollars to go around. No, if you put a competitive team on the field, there is going to be dollars spent. That's just how it is. We got some lousy pro teams here right now. People are wondering why fans don't show up and support them. It's because they're not good. So, and I want things to go well. I'm just tired of these teams being on scholarship. And I think that they've got something good going there, obviously. All right, sports360az.com. I feel much better now. I've just been on my rant today. Sports360az.com. Hey, thanks for the questions, too, for Tim. You can always reach me, Brad, at sports360az.com. Over on Twitter, @BradSusMatt. And we have our show here every day, Monday through Friday, from 10 until 11. It repeats all day, all night. And then our TV show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sismat, Football AZ. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen does his great job as always. Our staff and crew appreciate all their help. Enjoy your day.